story, Les Thatcher.
Doc Young and Les Thatcher here with you at Wrestling Weekly. My mic's a little bit loud tonight, Les.
Yes, it is, Doc. and welcome to the show, Wrestling Weekly. And if you're not hearing any audio problems, then you probably think you got the wrong show. But no, it is Wrestling Weekly. We are on time.
Yes, and I feel better now.
And I want everybody to know that Doc didn't party over the weekend, and because of that, I took a lot of verbal abuse before we came on the air.
Absolutely, because I'm getting...
I know how you guys rehabbing at AAR, so...
you get the shakes.
I don't know about that. I have heard those stories, yes.
I just get angry.
Okay.
Well, the reason Les is talking about this, and I had called Les on Thursday, and... I believe it was on Thursday or Friday. I don't remember what, but I called Les. I was kind of scared. I had went to my orthopedic doctor because I was having these pains in my shoulders and my arms and stuff. And this has been going back since probably October. But they were doing different tests and stuff. Well, they finally found out that I have some soft tissue damage around the base of my neck and sort of the spine, the C-spine section is what they call it, and reverse lordosis, which means your spine is starting to curve in the wrong direction. Forward and backward.
And Dr. Thatcher diagnosed that as too many shots.
Too many shots. I took
jerking your head back and arching your back to get the tequila shots down has done it. So anyway, go ahead.
I took one bump too many, Les.
Yeah, right. One bump only. You've only taken one bump.
That's exactly right. And Les was teasing me about that. And we're talking about, of course, No Second Chances, the DVD that we have for sale. Les had told me, and he made fun of me about this afterwards because of the way that I went down. When Romeo Rosselli pushed me, I just went down kind of like a rag doll on my butt and then hit my head on the back of the mat, which is what caused this after a little while. And the pain just started to get worse and worse because I wasn't doing anything to fix it. So,
yeah.
Well,
when I say this, I'm not picking on my sidekick. Well, yes, I am. I always pick
on
Doc. But you realize how many people promote wrestling shows or announcers, I mean ring announcers,
mm-hmm.
Everybody wants to be involved.
Right.
And yet, I can't say the word. Stuff happens.
Stuff does happen.
Right, and once you see, and that one bump told you more than I could have ever explained to you in hours of conversation, is that you didn't know what the hell you were doing.
Right.
Exactly, right?
And you'd asked me back in October, why did you do that? And I said, well, it was my show, and I kind of wanted to
do a little thing. Yeah, I wanted to be part of the show.
Right.
Yes.
So, now I have to go to physical therapy. I haven't been to physical therapy since I was 12, but I have to go to physical therapy starting this Thursday for about a month, and they're talking possible stuff like traction and what do you call that? The collar?
Cervical collar.
Cervical collar.
Yeah.
I can't believe that. I'm not mad at Romeo about it.
You know, well, see, and again, I'm not picking on you, but you're not in any kind of shape. I mean, when I say that, I don't mean you're unhealthy, you're not obese, you're not anorexic, but...
But I am handicapped.
Well, no, you know, but that's from the waist down.
No, less.
Well, mentally handicapped, yes, I know, but... But anyway, no, seriously. But the point is, what I'm saying is, something I tell kids when they first start today, and something that was told to me 47 years ago when I first started taking bumps, was you can get these little plastic cups. Some of them have foam in them now, gel in them. You know how Wellen's gelin and Maya Gelin's melon, and you've seen that commercial. But anyway.
There's no telling.
Huh?
There's no telling when you're gelin.
No telling what gelin's melon. Yeah, whatever. I don't know. But anyway, there's these little cups that go in the heels of your shoes, right?
Right.
Believe me, well, if you saw our MTV thing, True Life, I'm a pro wrestler. Then you saw the kid from Chicago, who was a jackass. But anyway, but he was talking about how sore his heels were and how he was walking on his toes and stuff, right?
Right.
And that's the deal. Your body is not accustomed to this.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? I have worked with martial artists. I've worked with you know, high-level soccer players, collegiate football players, bodybuilders. I can go on and on, you know, good athletes, but they're not prepared for this. There's not the same kind of conditioning. And after taking bumps for a while, you become, well, there's never a time that you don't feel a bump. I don't give a damn if you're taking 20 every minute, you know.
Right.
You're going to feel them. But the point is, you know, you become conditioned, and plus the landing and knowing exactly what to do. And it's just one of the things. See, it's like when you went down, you went on your butt, which put the base of your spine in jeopardy.
Right.
And then you didn't have any clue about tucking your chin.
Mm-hmm.
So your head bounced off the canvas,
right?
Which is a form of whiplash.
Yes.
You know, because you're just throwing yourself back, thinking, "Well, this is going to be cool. I got to really sell this." And Romeo's on the show tonight. The guy gave you the bump, and we're going to sue him for $8 trillion.
Absolutely.
And give him the reputation of being a crowbar. And for those who don't understand that, a crowbar is a guy who is very stiff to work with in the ring. As the old saying goes, please don't convince me, convince the audience.
Right.
And they can't feel anything, and I'd rather not.
Well, I guess this is a lesson that all the listeners of Wrestling Weekly can learn. Because when you do train, and you train long enough, you know that even if you're not ready for, you know, the bump that you're taking, you'll know how to land it anyway just by reaction and reflexes.
Well, no, you won't.
No? Am I wrong on this?
Well, you know what? Wait a minute. Let me decipher what you just said to me. You said that you should just know how to fall by instinct.
After you're training for a while.
Right. Yeah. No, that's one of the first things. And I tell everybody on their first several days of training, is listen, if you get the feeling you can't walk and chew gum, that's cool. Because
right.
We've all been there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't care. Ric Flair, Chris Benoit, the greatest worker, professional wrestler you can think of, wasn't born doing this, and you're clumsy to start with, and you're going to get sore, and you're going to. We had a kid train with us back in the 90s when I had HWA. He was a dancer, a male stripper, right?
Mm-hmm.
He had done competitive bodybuilding. He had been a gymnast. Now, you would think this guy could deal with it, right?
Yeah.
No. He never made it as a wrestler. Finally figured out he was having, now you're talking about your neck. We finally showed on tape, and he didn't believe it was happening to him. But I finally was able to show it to him on tape how he was not, for whatever reason, he wouldn't tuck his neck, wouldn't tuck his chin. He was bouncing his head. He ended up with some neck problems where he had to stop training for a while, and he came back, and he just couldn't break that habit. He could not learn to take the bump with his chin tucked into his chest,
mm-hmm.
Plain and simple. And, I mean, you know, believe it or not, there are people cannot take the basic back bump. I mean, and you got to get past that to move on.
To do,
you know,
anything, right. That's one of the first.
Well, that's protecting yourself.
Right.
You know. There's a lot of misconceptions. It's just like, if you're going to backdrop me, I want to get some air. What I mean by that, I want to get up, because the higher I get, the more opportunity I have to turn, get flat, and land properly. If I slide off your back, if you don't give me a help in getting the elevation, man, that gets dangerous,
mm-hmm.
You know. And there's a lot of little things like that. You're not going to take any more bumps. We've pretty much established that.
Exactly. And now I'm on these muscle relaxers to stop the muscle spasms.
Oh, my God. It's prescription drugs.
So,
it was alcohol last week.
It's not pain medicine. It's just muscle relaxers.
No, I know. I've had muscle relaxers.
But you cannot drink on them. So
no.
Now I have stopped drinking completely.
Oh, God.
Which is why Les was teasing me at the beginning of the show.
Yeah. That's how we got here, 10 minutes later.
Right, because he knows that I love my beer.
Yes, he does.
Me and beer are friends. We have been really tight for years. He introduced me to my daughter's mom and everything. But, you know, sometimes relationships don't
work. Who you are no
out.
Longer with, by That's the way, but you met her through beer, right?
Through beer.
Okay, well, see
us.
That... you might be calling that a plus. I don't know. I kind of put that on the minus side of the ledger. I'm not real sure now. You know, I don't live in Indiana, so maybe I'm wired differently than you are. Anyway, let's still talking about domestic relations and marriage counseling. Let's talk about wrestling. First, of all, we're laughing. I want to get very serious. A very dear friend of mine passed away over the weekend, Ernie Ladd. And I'll tell you, it really popped me. Last time I had a chance to see Ernie was down at Gulf Coast Reunion in Mobile, not this year. But I hadn't seen him in a long time. Well, let me start way back. I met Ernie the first time in early 60s when he was in for the Indianapolis office. You know, he was still playing football at the time. And we worked, you know, several territories together, made some car trips together. One of the things that I'll never forget, we were in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, back in winter of 66, 67. Well, actually, it had to be after football season anyway. But anyway, Ernie was on the card in Baton Rouge, and Bucky Buchanan, who, if you follow football, was one of the, Ernie. He and Ernie were bookend tackles, defensive tackles for the Kansas City Chiefs. They went to two Super Bowls with the Chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, Bucky was a Grambling graduate too, from Grambling College, for Eddie Robinson, who was the winningest college football coach in history. And he came to visit Ernie. We're standing in the dressing room talking, and I'm getting a sore neck looking up, standing between these guys, and converse. You know, and I knew Ernie was a tough guy, and you know, I'd read that he was quite a headhunter in terms of football. You know, he went out to take guys out. I mean, not to permanently injure him, you know, but he went out there to win games. And but I'm standing here and I'm looking at these guys, and I'm thinking, okay, now I'm about the size of an average NFL running back at 5'9", about 215 at that time. And I'm thinking, okay, here's Ernie and Buck, both 6'9", 300 plus, or 300, in that range anyway. Now, if I'm turning the corner, coming out from behind my offensive line, and I see these two guys in pads, bearing down on me with fire in their eyes.
You're going the other direction.
Brother, I want to cough up the ear. You take the football, my butt's out of here.
You know? Your shoes.
I would realize that as a running back, I'd have pads on too, but I mean, whoa, you know. Ernie, and, you know, he's cancer. He's been fighting cancer a little over 3 years.
Right.
He was, you know, I was telling my wife yesterday, we were talking about it, and when he came to Mobile, I hadn't seen him in a number of years, and he was, you know, he walked up to, we were standing out in front of the building, he walked up, and Les, how you doing, and got a hug, and anyway, we started talking. You know, Ernie's been in the ministry. And so anyway, he's talking about his cancer and how he's going to beat it. And he can't walk straight because of bad knees and more, you know, physical problems as well as the cancer. But I'm thinking, here's a guy, he's smiling, he's upbeat, he's, you know, he's got a great attitude. And you know that this cancer has caused him pain and you know, and suffering and sickness and,
yeah,
and all the things that he's treating. Cancer creates, and but I'll never forget that he led us in prayer before the Friday evening meal, and it was so powerful. I mean, it really was. Also, I was picking at him. I said, "Well, hey, I had the news on. I saw you walking in tall cotton. You and GW shaking hands at the Astrodome in Houston. You know, this was post Katrina. You know, the hurricane."
Right.
And he was, you know, he started, I was picking on him, you know, about hanging out with the president.
Mm-hmm.
But he said he was so humbled and honored to be able to try and help those people that were housed there at the Superdome during that disaster. And, when I think of my friend Ernie Ladd, he's such a big, tough, rugged guy, but then his heart and his love was just as big.
Right.
You know, I had a tough time. Well, this has been a bad year. I mean, so far, you know, a lot of my peers have cashed it in, and that's something we were talking about in Mobile too. Percy and I were talking about you don't even have to be close to some of these guys, but you shared. Well, you knew you shared the same life because you were in the same. I mean. You know, you've gone through the same rituals and done the same things, and it's something you can tell the younger generation about, and I don't mean it in any disrespectful way, but they don't understand it. you had to have done it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like you might not even be close to a guy or might have not shared the same political or religious views as somebody, but you knew if that guy, if you saw that somebody, if a couple guys jumped him on the streets, you're there.
Right.
You know, you had that camaraderie thing. And Ernie was just a great guy, and he'll certainly be, he'll be missed. Bill Watts wrote a tremendous thing about that. Ernie studied the wrestling business. Ernie was a student of the business, and he was a great guy, and he'll certainly be missed.
And definitely not just a great wrestler, but a great football player also.
Yeah, he's in the American Football League Hall of Fame. But like I say, he went to at least, two Super Bowls. He was drafted by San Diego. And then he played at San Diego, Houston, and then finally Kansas City, and then finally gave it up because, you know, wrestling was actually more lucrative at the time. But,
mm-hmm.
To kind of explain that, a lot of guys think, well, you know, they see the kind of money football players are making now. But back when George Allen was coaching the Washington Redskins, and he was there was talk of him wanting to see if they could make Andre the Giant into a defensive lineman. Now stop and imagine that. You know, the ball snapped and Andre just starts picking guys up and pitching them left and right to sort them out until he finds the guy with the little pigskin. But anyway, but the point was there was talk between Andre's people and the Redskins. But what it came down to was that if Andre went in with rookie money as a defensive lineman,
mm-hmm.
he would have been taking a tremendous pay cut over what he was making wrestling.
Right.
So it just never got off the ground, you know. So, and realize, a lot of the young guys who are listening to us probably don't know, but back when I was, realize I'll be 67 this year. Back when I was a kid, Cincinnati Royals, where Jerry Lucas from the New York Knicks World Championship basketball teams and Oscar Robertson, who was one of the greatest pro college basketball players of all time have played here at the University of Cincinnati. But those guys played for the Cincinnati Royals in the NBA, and they had off-season jobs.
Yeah.
Back when I was a kid, baseball players had off-season jobs, football players, basketball, because the money wasn't there.
It really didn't get crazy until maybe the late 70s?
I got a little crazier, I guess, in the late 60s and early 70s, I guess, it started picking up. But anyway, you know, so when I, you know, talk about the money differential, well, I was saying with Wahoo, you know, he played football, combined the two. There's several guys did, but, you know, the point was, at some point, for Ernie, it just the money was better in wrestling.
Yeah, now you got an NBA rookie who sits on the bench most of the year making three times what a wrestler does.
Makes $3 million walking in, you know,
yeah.
Sure. Oh, yeah, I mean, well, you know, with the NBA, of course, your teams aren't, you don't have 30-man rosters.
Right.
You know, to think that a guy is he's bellyaching because he's only getting $8.5 million a year.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that would turn me off, too. I don't know what I would. Anyway. Ernie Ladd was a great guy, a good personal friend, and may he rest in peace, and he'll certainly be missed. He contributed a tremendous amount. Well, if you watched Raw last night, they even did a bit on him. So,
yeah, it was a nice package.
Yeah, it really was.
During Monday Night Raw and last night, Mr. Fuji was announced as the fifth.
Yeah,
Fuji
is a good guy too. I enjoyed him. Last time we worked together was in the Knoxville territory, Southeastern Wrestling. In the 70s. In fact, Fuji, as far as I know, still lives around Jefferson City, Tennessee. He married a lady from there, and they have twins.
Wow.
And so Jefferson City is just east of Knoxville, maybe 20, 25 miles, whatever. But anyway, I think Fuji still... last time I saw Fuji was at a WWE show in Knoxville when I was training for WWE. And I had a couple of my guys down there to do dark matches in Knoxville, and Fuji was there. He's a cool, good guy.
The whole list so far for this year's Hall of Fame goes like this. It's the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes,
uh-huh.
Kurt Hennig, Mr. Perfect,
right.
Jerry the King Lawler, Mr. Fuji, and Nick Bockwinkel's going to be in there this
year.
Yeah,
Nick, and I think Nick has earned that spot. I mean, he was... with the exception of Vern Gagne himself in the AWA, I think Nick was probably the most outstanding champion, and I don't mean that in any disrespectful way to anybody that held the AWA title, but Nick was probably, next to Vern, the guy who had it the most, and probably was the most productive with it. And Nick was what we call back in our time a wrestling heel. He did intelligent interviews. He didn't yell and scream. He did wrestle, and he would, you know, until you could out-wrestle him, and then, you know, then he got his healing stuff in. But anyway, yeah, I'm happy for him as well. And, of course, Virgil, Dusty, you know, obviously he deserves it. And Henning as well, I think. So.
Definitely.
Yeah.
PW Insider is reporting that WWE made a change internally this week in regards to asking prices for booking their talent for autograph sessions around the country. According to the reports, WWE has doubled and even tripled in some cases the price of booking talent for autograph sessions at collectible stores, comic stores, and similar stores like that for the future. The change was said to have taken place to bring the talents up to a price where they were, quote, worth on the market. As a result, you're probably not going to see a lot of autograph signings in the future with WWE guys anymore.
Probably not.
They were pretty expensive as it is, I know. And with doubled and tripled the prices, and it's gonna take a lot of moolah to get the Undertaker to come down and
well, Taker, I don't think Taker does any of that stuff anymore. Anyway, I know of a situation back. Let me stop thinking here a minute. It had to be probably 6-7 years ago that memorabilia store, it sells all kinds of collectibles and stuff here in Cincinnati, one of the big major malls. I know because I know the guy that owns it. Well, I knew, you know, I had a working relationship with the guy that owned the store, and he told me that he had offered Taker 10 big ones. He was going to be in Cincinnati or Dayton or something just to do whatever, and Taker turned it down.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, you know, the kind of money he's made, and a lot of times that becomes a hassle. I've seen, when Mick was doing a double, I remember picking him up there in Lima. He and Al had an autograph session up there, and I drove up and got him for another guy with a store here, a collectible store here in town that was a friend of mine, and brought him down for that. He did a double shot and then had to jump on a plane and go wherever. But, you know, it's, some guys just don't think it's worth the time, so.
It's a grind.
It is. But, you know, it's obviously good money for the younger guys who don't have the huge downside guarantees or aren't working the top shots and getting the big, pay-per-view payoffs.
That's true. But I would, I don't know if I would be good at an autograph signing because, I can write a whole page of something and my wrist starts to hurt, you know. I don't think I could sign 2,000 autographs, in 2 hours or 3 hours or something like that. I couldn't do it. I would have one of those rubber stamps,
Yeah.
I would just be
okay,
one of those guys.
All right. Well, when you get to that point, when you ask $20,000 for a 10-minute session or something,
right.
we'll consider the rubber stamp thing.
Right.
I was thinking last week with Mick. He was at home. I think it's the first time. I've done interviews with him. Well, you've got to realize when I had the 3-hour Wednesday night block here in Cincinnati on one of the Clear Channel stations for 2 years, I've had Mick in studio. One time when Mick and his family lived in Navarre, Florida, which is in the Panhandle, to the east of Pensacola, he was buckling down for an expected hurricane while we did an interview. I remember talking to him in an airport. I was thinking, a day or so after we did last week's show, I thought, wow, maybe this is the first time I've talked to Mick at home in a long time.
Absolutely. I think the last time we had him on the show before last week.
He was in a dressing room somewhere, wasn't he?
No, I think he was leaving the airport, but I remember he called and we had to delay his interview.
Yeah.
Because his plane was late or something like that. But, he was doing it, from the airport, I believe.
He's on ECW tonight.
Yeah, he's going to be on ECW.
Yeah, and the whole thing with Ashley last night, I'm sorry, she dresses funny. I subscribe to Playboy. My hope is that she'll look better naked than she looks in them goofy clothes. honestly, her legs look scrawny as the devil in those that particular outfit. And pushing her because of the Playboy thing as a tough wrestler is just beyond my comprehension. As many good things as that company's been doing in the last month or so, wrestling-wise, I'm thinking, please.
It's I don't know. I don't really like Playboy. I don't get into it. They put so much makeup on them people and they airbrush so much.
I'm gonna tell you, I've been subscribing to Playboy probably 30 years
mm-hmm.
or more. you know. And honestly, I do read the articles, the interviews, and there's a lot of really, you know, entertaining stuff and things to perk your brain cells up in there. Besides naked women, but I mean, there's nothing wrong with them either. But I, you know, I'm thinking. But I looked at her in that goofy. She wears that baseball cap backwards and those goofy mesh hose with boots, and I'm thinking, you look like hell.
Baseball cap backwards, who does that remind you of?
I give up. practically every person under the age of 40 that wears a baseball cap. Hey. I may be one of the few that actually wears the bill where it belongs.
No, that's not true, actually.
And I refuse to yank mine down on my head like a skull cap. I block the top of mine out. I new era caps, like the Major League New Era caps, are the ones that I prefer because I can block them. I've been blocking them like that since I was a kid playing knothole baseball, which is Cincinnati's regional answer to Little League here. But anyway,
But, you know, back to Ashley, I've seen some pictures of her at her house, you know, just dressed down, not a bunch of makeup on. She's not half naked or anything like that. It was around the time she was with Matt Hardy.
Somebody said...
And she looks good there.
If she wanted Nick to see her naked, why don't she just take her clothes off?
That's true, too.
You know.
But I guess you got to shell out the money.
I guess.
You gotta,
whatever.
What is it, $4.95 an issue now?
Whatever. And I got to see the tape of Milena and Mickey James getting dropped on her head.
Yeah.
Scary.
Ouch.
See, but there is a situation that that's a dangerous bump, and it's not. And you've got it's a partnership thing, you know.
What do you think went wrong with that bump?
I don't know. She slipped out of her hands. Milena wasn't ready for her. There's a million things that could have happened. I don't know.
It looked like Milena tried to stop her from doing that. You know what I mean?
Well, yes. Because see, the part of it is when she gets up there, there's got to be a certain pause for her to know she's ready to go. I mean, when I say this, we're not realize that there's so many things in our business that are a matter of half seconds, not minutes and hours or days, but milliseconds and microseconds, and just the timing issue of getting something right, the difference between injuring yourself seriously or not injuring yourself at all is just a matter of, you know, half seconds sometimes.
Or inches.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So I saw that, and I thought, whoa, man, she's lucky. Had that have been a guy and heavier, there's a good chance they'd have broken his neck.
It's possible.
You know, and the fact that she's back working, I'm not sure if that's smart or stupid. I really don't know because I don't know the extent of, you know, of her injury. But
it might have just shaken her up. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know either. I don't know either.
I'm sure they wouldn't.
Oh, one of the things I want to say, I think, and I'll lock it in for you for sure, but Percy and I think my run, my 3 days in Mobile will be June 8th, 9th, and 10th. It's Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You know, for the Gulf South, GulfSouthWrestling.com, if you're an independent wrestler would like to make it in, we're going to do a Friday evening Q&A, and then all day Saturday and all day Sunday.
Sweet.
I
would go to the Q&A, but, you know, I get you for free. I could just call you up and be like, hey,
yeah. Yeah, so, well, I'm gonna start sending you a bill. So.
I think that's what it's gonna come down to in the end.
Hey, Cena's gonna do something I'd like to do.
What's that?
He's doing a reality thing. It's racing. They're taping it at Charlotte Motor Speedway.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But anyway, our celebrities are being taught to drive the Grand National cars. I guess Grand National. I don't know. I know they're doing it at Charlotte.
Yeah, you should definitely be in there.
I'd love that. Well, you know, a lot. Steamboat used to drag race. Timmy Woods, Mr. Wrestling, did drag racing. As we had Johnny Walker wrestling too. He was drove stock cars. Johnny Weaver drove stock cars. I'm sure there's some other. Well, Bob Holly drove stocks.
I'm too wimpy to go that fast. If I was in a car like that was going over 100 miles an hour, I'd lose my damn mind.
It's let me say, you know what? It's a rush that I still turn on some of the drag meets on ESPN and that are on TV, and I haven't driven in years. And I sit here and my palms get sweaty and my mouth gets dry, and I want to. I really do. I don't want to go. You got to realize, to me, a big rush. I never owned a dragster, a rail job, whatever you want to call it. A lot of guys, if they won't follow drag racing, we know what I'm talking about. Anyway, But I drove someone else's, and when I was young, and I hit 170 in the high nines.
Good Lord.
In a dragster, right?
Mm.
And I thought that was something. You know, I thought I had a little hair on my butt then. And you got to realize these guys now, you know, are popping 300 in less than 5 seconds.
Yeah.
And you want to talk about 0 to 300 plus in less than 5 seconds. Stop and count to five and realize you've got, think of the inertia. Think of the G-forces.
Yeah, wouldn't that put a toll on your body after
Well, long? Sure. And a lot of people think that drag racing is just stab and steer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but believe me, at those kind of speeds, well, even when I'm talking at 150, 170, if that car starts to get out of shape, brother, you better be able to control it because, you know, if it's once you lose it, you've lost it. I mean,
right.
that's the end of it.
And
know?
That's just to stay from without crashing. Winning is a whole different thing, too.
Yeah, well, it's getting out of the hole, well, off the line is what we call out of the hole, with just enough tire spin to get traction. And, well, of course, now most of the transmissions on the big, real powerful ones are automatics. But we had, you know, shifting was back when I started drag racing, there were, you know, it was all column shifts.
Yeah.
And that was an art. I mean, to be able to power shift off the column. And that's a whole other 2-hour show talking about, you know,
racing. Well,
how drag
racing
has evolved since I started doing it in 1955. But anyway. TNA's pay-per-view, I hear mixed reviews on that, and I would have to concur. I thought Joe and Christian busted butt and did what they could do with that. I think there were, you know, some really bad finishes.
What do you think about Sting and Abyss?
It wasn't, well, you see, you get all... You gimmick things to death, right? I mean, it's everything has to have. Well, it's like LAX and 3D, right?
Mm-hmm.
One week it's a ghetto street fight. The next week after before that it's an Italian street fight. Then it's a Mexican street fight. And then it's, but you know, it's really don't mean anything.
In the end, it's all street fight.
Well, in the end, how much different can it really be?
Right. It's just Mexicans or Italians.
And that's the other thing too is everybody just over. And I say everybody. I think the business is, as a whole is pretty much overbooked.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing left to anticipate, you know. And of course, lockout is going to be every cage match, which I find just crazy. The first time they did it, and this will be the third or the fourth time. But
yeah, they did good numbers on that one last year, though. It was one of
I was so afraid that Rhino and Styles might get hurt on that X. See, there's the other thing. That was I think one of the better matches of that particular genre that I've ever seen.
I was more scared for Rhino because when Rhino looks scared, I'm scared for him, and Rhino looks scared.
Well, you know that's where. Scaffold matches where Cornette tore his knee up and still's having problems with it.
Mm-hmm.
And but you know those things are just you know you don't expect them to be really good because there's not a lot of room for good.
Right. It's basically one big bump.
And I'm going to tell you the truth. I couldn't do one of those because I have a fear of heights.
Me too.
Missile drop kicks off the top rope, and that was a big thing. You got to realize in the 60s and 70s when I went to the top to do a drop kick, that was a big bump.
Right.
You know? But I once I went up there, there was no looking down. If I looked down, I probably would have froze or fallen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I mean, I timed it so I was hitting the top and straightening it up as my opponent was turning into me, and so that I didn't have to stay up there just a matter of a second or so, and then, you know, and then I'm launching. But, yeah, to do the X scaffold thing or a scaffold match at all, I just that wouldn't be for me. I'd have to tell a promoter, nope.
Right.
You don't have that kind of money.
Exactly.
No.
We've got Romeo Rosselli, the heartthrob. He's going to be here on the show tonight. Of course, next week, the lovely Lacey is going to be joining us. Lacey.
Well, okay. Then I'll just stay off, and then you can slobber all over the telephone next week by yourself. And Brian Alvarez is going to be with us tonight, and he's traveling to Indiana.
Yes.
For a match. He and Vinny's... deal has gotten Brian bookings all over the country.
That's right. He's now out of retirement almost.
Yeah.
Almost completely.
The old guy. He had his first retirement before Mick Foley probably had his first match. So he's got 4,000 or 5,000 retirements to go yet.
Absolutely. But, we're going to take a break right now, and we're going to get Brian on. We've got a little bit more news later on. And, of course, like we said, Romeo Rosselli is going to be here. You're listening to Doc Young and Les Thatcher. It's Wrestling Weekly. Stick around.
We know, you hate this part, but Wrestling Weekly will return after this short break.
Why are you doing this to me?
So many of these wrestling websites nowadays strongly promote their pay-per-view play-by-plays as if they were something unbelievably special. The problem is that they are not special. In fact, they're all the same. Nothing separates one from the other, and if you've seen one, you've seen them all. However, there is one site that has original play-by-play that's different from all the rest. 4WWrestling.com, a proud supporter of the Voice of Wrestling radio show, invites you to witness the ultimate play-by-play experience, live during every WWE pay-per-view. And if you're asking what makes them so different, well, 4W-Wrestling.com is the only site to put up pictures from the actual pay-per-view as it happens. You see what's taking place on the pay-per-view instead of just reading about it. If you're not buying a pay-per-view, but you're looking for the next best thing, 4W-Wrestling.com. Online wrestling evolved.
Hey, do you find that wrestling is more to you than just a passing fancy? Do you need to know more about your favorite wrestler? Do you absolutely have to know all about their history? You, my friend, aren't just passionate. You're obsessed.
Geez, you know, that information might have been a little more useful to me yesterday.
We have a fix for that.
Throw me a frickin' bone here. Need the info.
Check out obsessedwithwrestling.com. All the info you need to know about everyone. Located at www.obsessedwithwrestling.com. Histories, title info, bios, aliases, real names.
Once again, things that could have been brought to my attention yesterday!
If wrestling isn't just a passion, but an obsession, check out www.obsessedwithwrestling.com today.
Wrestling-radio.com, the internet's newest wrestling radio promotion. We offer a direct link to your wrestling radio website, a personal profile, and a control panel to maintain your own shows. And it's all free. That's right, 100% free. Wrestling-radio.com promotes some of the best online wrestling radio shows today, such as The Main Event with Chris, Woody and Will, The Irish Whip with Big Joe and JP, The Yard with Moondog, Wrestling Weekly with Doc Young and the legendary Les Thatcher, plus many more. So what are you waiting for? Sign up today and watch your show grow. For more information, log on to www.wrestling-radio.com today.
He considers himself God's gift to wrestling, and millions of his faithful agree. With nearly 4 hours of footage and exclusive commentary and matches, this DVD chronicles Daniel's rise from Chicago's Windy City Wrestling to the Asylum in Nashville, and finally to the top of TNA. TNA Home Video presents Heaven Sent, Hell Bound, the best of Christopher Daniels. Available at most retailers and TNAWrestling.com.
Doc Young and Les Thatcher back with you at Wrestling Weekly. On the line right now for Hot Topic this week from the Figure Four Weekly newsletter and Wrestling Observer Live, our good friend Brian Alvarez is here. Brian, thanks for returning to Wrestling Weekly.
Thanks for having me.
It's always fun to have you here.
I was thinking when I heard about this, you're coming out of, you may have retired and unretired at an earlier age. That may be a professional wrestling record that will never be broken again.
Well, to be fair, I always said I was never actually going to say I was retired. I just said I didn't want to say it because everybody comes back. You know what I mean?
Right.
But at the time, I figured I ain't coming back. Nothing's
right.
Getting me back.
And now you're going to be just a couple hundred miles from me, man. You're coming halfway across the country, and you and Vinny on the tube thing. My God. This is a whole new career for you now.
Well, Vinny ain't coming along. He saw the match, and only one man was asked to go to Portage, Indiana.
Yeah.
Happened to be me, but yep, Portage, Indiana on Saturday night. I will be wrestling Larry Sweeney for his ICWA Texarkana television title.
Yes, and you're going to rename it?
I'm going to rename it the Frank A. Gotch Collar and Elbow Memorial Championship.
That's exactly.
You're going after the Texarkana belt in Portage, Indiana.
Yes, and I'm going to take it back to Bothell.
All the way back to the Washington State.
It becomes almost an international title with this kind of logistics, doesn't it?
I'm thinking that maybe if time, the title will have to be renamed, and this would be a good time to do it.
There you go.
You're going to throw it down, like do a Shane Douglas ECW promo in the middle.
Well, I don't have a better belt to replace it with, so I probably will just hold on to it.
Are you training as hard for this as you were with your match with Vinny?
I'm actually, let's see... I think I'm training a little bit harder, actually, but just because I've been training harder lately than normal.
Have you done any matches recently in preparation for this? I mean,
well, actually, Buddy Wayne, my friend Buddy Wayne, has a school,
right?
And I've been going out there 3 days a week for about the past probably 4 or 5 months, really. And part of the school is just, you know, you get guys in the ring and you do matches. So,
right.
Now, it's obviously different than going out there in front of a crowd and that sort of thing, but. I mean, I'm having not full-on matches, but pretty full-on matches, probably, you know, 9 a week.
Well, you know, the thing I think that a lot of guys don't understand, Brian, and I know you will concur with this, is that, A, you only get ring win one place, and that's in a ring.
Yep.
You can ride bikes, you can run, you can do whatever you want, but it's a whole different ball game. And, two, I think so many of the independent kids don't understand that they don't have timing because they never had timing because they think being in that ring once a month or once every 10 days is all it takes. But, you probably know some guys, too, on the big rosters that really are upset if they don't get to work because they realize the greatest workers in the world, Steamboat, Flair, whoever, their timing's gone if they aren't consistent staying in the ring.
Well, the thing that I found interesting was there was a guy that was training. He actually trained with Buddy Rose and with Buddy Wayne, and he was going to the school every day and that sort of thing. And then one day he happened to get booked on a show, and he never went back to the school. It was like he was a wrestler now.
Oh yeah.
And to me it's like I go to Buddy's school every day, and Buddy broke in like 1987, and he wrestled all over the place, the Maritimes, all over the Northwest. He's been to Mexico. He's been everywhere. And, you know, he's seen it all. He's wrestled Steamboat and Michaels, and he's done jobs at WWE and WCW. And when I go to the school, I mean, I've been in a ring since 1998, and I still go there every day. And I'm like, I never knew that before. I learned something today.
Sure.
And I just, if you're a wrestler and you've got a ring nearby, I can't fathom you're not going and working out there,
right.
and thinking, well, I'm a wrestler now. I'm fine with 2 dates a month or whatever.
But you know, so many guys take that stance. Well, I guess in part because they are hobbyists opposed to pursuing it as a full time career. But still, they don't have any timing. You know, and you're absolutely right. When I had HWA, the deal was you. I expected you to be in the ring. Three to four times a week, whether that was two practices and two shows, or the other part was, and realize I'm talking about guys like my Matt Stryker, Nigel McGuinness, Chad Collier, BJ Whitmer, guys of that caliber that were still, even after they had been wrestling a couple of years, I expected them in my ring.
Yeah.
Because that's, you know, you need that to keep sharp and to get sharper. You know, an example that I mention to kids all the time, I said, you go out to Vegas, and you watch the show dance, the chorus line dancers in any major show, and they may do two shows a night, three shows a night, whatever it happens to be. But if you check in there the next day at noon in that showroom, they're in there practicing because you never, you know, I mean, it's just the more you do it, the sharper you become. It becomes part of you, opposed to you having to stop and think about it.
Yeah, and I mean, like I said, it's not like we're going full speed, but just being in there on a regular basis, every day it sort of feels like I sort of I sort of get it more.
Yeah.
Like I can't ever picture a day where I would get in the ring and think, well, I got it all figured out. I'm done. And I think that once you hit that point, you are done.
Yeah, you're right. You plateau and that's the end of it. I know when Harley and Ricky and I were doing the 3-day camps together, one of the things that we try to convey to the kids is that if we all could go back to being 25 or 30 years old, again, between the three of us, we've had God knows how many thousands of matches. But if we could back the time, the clock up, we would all set out to have the best match we've ever had, meaning we're never satisfied.
Yeah.
And you're right. Once you become, but then again, you work on the indie circuit, and you've seen a lot of satisfied people who are horrible. Am I right?
Well, that's why I pick my match.
That's why he's coming to Indiana, baby.
I will say, though, that picking my matches, I've had about four since last August, so. But I'm fine with that.
But working in the school, and I'll tell you the other thing, Brian, that I always did with my, I would take my advanced guys, and I don't know if Buddy does this or not, but I'd take my advanced guys and put them with a newer student, and I'd say, okay, now within his framework, because there'll be things that you can do that he can't, I need a 5-minute match with this finish or a 6-minute match with this finish. Now, my stance there is if you have carried this guy through that and made him look decent, then you've actually elevated yourself as well.
Yeah, the way that we usually do it is most of the guys are really, really new.
Uh-huh.
And so it's usually we do a lot of tags. It'll be me and Buddy working as a heel team against two guys, and just basically they listen and they go along. And when it seems like they're starting to get a clue, we'll put me on the other team, and Buddy will take one of the guys, the more advanced, and have that guy follow the lead as a heel and hope that he can, he's been watching, he's been seeing how you lead a match, and maybe he can start trying to do that. But it's a very – and I'm sure you know this. It's such a long process that everybody thinks, well, I want to be a heel. I want to go out and yell at the people.
Yeah.
Not realizing that the hardest job in the world – is being a good heel.
You're right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just calling some woman a fat old pig. It's actually what you do to the baby face and getting the reaction that you would get by calling her nasty names.
Yeah, I mean, I used to work matches with Buddy, and he would be the heel, and we would be the opener on a show that nobody had any idea who we were, and he would get him into the match, and he wouldn't say one thing to anybody. He would just wrestle me.
Right.
And it was how he did it that got him into the match, and I was like, wow, that is an art right there.
You're right.
Awesome.
Well, one of the best heels of my era was Johnny Valentine, and here was a guy who basically ignored the audience.
Yeah.
I mean, from the time he walked from the dressing room to the ring, hey, I'm special, I'm here, and I look over you people, not at you.
Yeah.
And yet he drew money all over the place. Because of his timing and his psychology between the ropes and not yelling at somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. This is going to be this Saturday at the Camelot Sportsplex in Portage, Indiana. You get to see Big Bri, and I'll be there. I got your back, Bri, way back in the third row. I'll be in the third row somewhere, but if something happens, I'm going to throw a cup at Larry Sweeney. That's how I'm going to back you up.
I just like Les laughing like a madman in the background.
Yeah, listen, Brian, he took one bump at his show last summer, and he's now going to rehab for that, so that's how much he's got your back.
That's why I'm bringing the cup with me instead of some sort of weapon or jumping in there to defend Brian. I'm just bringing a plastic cup.
Well, I think a weapon might be fine as well.
And hopefully, if I throw it right, it'll poke Larry Sweeney in the eye.
Maybe you should aim at me.
That might be something to consider.
You know what? We don't talk about MMA a lot here, but I know on Observer Live, that, and of course in the Observer, if you read that, and Brian covers it in Figure Four Weekly as well. A lot of MMA. I was going to ask, did you watch any of the International Fight League last night?
Yes, I did.
And you were taken back by the whole gruesome thing that we're going to show you somebody being stretchered out for 2 hours?
Well, it was – I had very mixed feelings on that show because, to me, it's like, okay, you're playing up the violence aspect of it. And to me, I almost didn't mind that too much because I know it's not actually that violent.
Right.
It's almost like they were working – this to be more violent than it was to try and get viewers.
Sure.
And I was like, okay, well, you know, that's all fine, and everybody was cutting these promos, and they were all angry, and I thought, okay, at least this is different, and at least it's, you know, it's not what I see on UFC. It's not like the old IFL, which was ungodly boring. It was something different.
Yeah.
And then to me, the show just fell completely off a cliff because they had this team format, and I guess they wanted to get all the matches from a particular show on the air, but they didn't bother. You know, half the time I couldn't even tell who was who because they didn't have a graphic up there.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I thought through the whole 2 hours was...
what's happening?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's team-based, and I'm not a big fan of sports, but I know that on a team-based show, you have a scoreboard.
Right.
Tell us how many points this team has, how many points this team has, and most importantly, who's the dude in the blue trim? I have no clue because
right.
They didn't have a graphic up for me. So I actually tried to do like a normal TV report, and by about an hour and a half in, I was like, I can't do this. I have no idea what's going on. I'm far more worthless than everybody else watching this right now, and I give up. And I watched the show, and it was over, and I thought, there's something here, but it needs a drastic overhaul.
Do you think now, again, you're a bigger fan. I am becoming more and more a fan because so much of UFC's promotional stuff is just the same type of stuff. Well, you know, Dave says the same thing, same type of stuff we did in the 60s and 70s, for God's sake.
Yeah.
And we should be doing now, but we're not smart enough to do that. But anyway, do you think that they're because UFC has scored so heavily and done so well that now everybody wants to get in the act and they're just pushing product that's not quality?
I don't think it's so much pushing a product that's not quality. I think it's a lot of guys are trying to jump on a bandwagon that really doesn't exist. I mean,
yeah.
There's not an MMA boom. There's a UFC boom. UFC is huge. It's kind of like how, you know, just because if WWE is hot right now, which it is, it's pretty hot. I mean, it's not like you can just go and promote wrestling with guys nobody's ever heard of and make any money.
Sure.
And it's the exact same way with MMA. UFC is very popular because they've got huge stars, and that works. And IFL right now, IFL has everything going for them, but they're very much like TNA in that they've got a good time slot it's a network, My Network TV, that nobody watches, but they can watch because it's in it's in more homes than Raw, it's in more homes than Spike TV and TNA. It just nobody watches the channel, but it's there. And they've got all these things going for them, and they don't get it.
Yeah.
I mean, watching IFL was so similar to watching Impact because there was so much stuff going on. They were trying to get so many people on TV. They were moving so fast that at the end of the show, I was like, I don't know anything that happened. Nobody really sticks out to me, and I have no reason to watch this show next week.
Yeah.
And that's a bad thing.
You're right. Bodog, did you see that a few weeks back?
I did. I watched it. I thought this will do a 0.1 rating.
That was low rent, was it?
That's
not
exactly what it did, 0.1. But, yeah, it's another one. It's just like, in that show, there's advertising everywhere, but they didn't advertise the time and date,
right.
Channel,
mm-hmm.
And so it got a 0.1.
And that girl who supposedly is a singing star in Canada that was...
Biff Naked?
Yeah, she was horrible. I mean,
oh, yeah.
She had no personality. Nobody cared. It was just, that whole thing was, I thought, talk about something that just seemed like it was thrown together.
The Bodog I'm actually fine with because Calvin Ayer is an insane billionaire, and I don't think he cares. I think he just wants to be involved in MMA.
Kind of like a guy we know.
Yeah, but he's paying a lot of money to a lot of guys to really not do nothing. And
yeah.
To me... If you can make the money as a fighter, make it.
I'll go over there and do nothing.
Sure. The last tapings were in Costa Rica, and he flew in like 80 guys, and they just partied all weekend and had some fights. And they're not going to make any money off it, but Calvin Ayer, that's the difference between Calvin Ayer and Dixie Carter. I mean, you got to know that Panda, they're not a multi-billion dollar company.
Mm-hmm.
And if they continue losing money, in any moment they could pull the plug. And, you know, when you've got that pressure on you, you got to try and do something. And Bodog doesn't have that pressure.
Yeah.
They'll just go as long as this guy is happy. So,
yeah, it's more,
who cares?
It's more his large toy than it is.
It is.
Something
it's
to be productive in terms of making money, right?
It's a giant toy.
Yeah.
And I figure for all the guys involved, make your money while you can. Why not? He doesn't care.
Since you just touched on Dixie Carter, no pun intended, give me some of your input on Sunday night's pay-per-view.
Somebody that was at the building in the crowd, they were watching the show, and after the Sting match with Abyss, which I might add, I didn't even know how you win until after the bell rang to end the match. Apparently you just put the guy in a coffin. But afterwards they tried to raise the coffin, I guess to the heavens, but it only went up like 8 feet because there's a giant Ultimate X structure above it. And this guy's like, that's when I knew there was too many gimmicks on this show. They couldn't even raise one gimmick because it bumped into another gimmick.
Go ahead, Brian.
Well, the thing to me is I'm watching this show, and I thought, okay, here's what TNA is today. TNA is a bunch of really good wrestlers that work their ass off and are handicapped. And it's like a game. It's like, okay, we're going to take AJ Styles and Rhino that can have a really good match, and we're going to put them 20 feet in the air on a 20-inch wide scaffold, and we're going to try and have them have a good match. We're going to take Gail Kim, who's this great high-flying babyface, and we're going to tie a rope to her, make sure she can't do any of her spots. We're going to take Sting and Abyss, and they can have a good match, but we're going to put them in Castlevania, the old video game. There's going to be coffins and candles and all sorts of craziness. And I just watched the show, and it was like, all of these matches could be so good, but you've gone out of your way to try and make them bad.
Yeah.
You know, I said to somebody, when Jerry Lynn came back, I was excited, and then I said to somebody the other day, I said, Jerry Lynn doesn't need ladders, he doesn't need multi-person matches, he doesn't need gimmicks. Give him Saban, give him Shelley, give him any of these guys with any talent at all, and give him some time, and he'll go out there and make them and put the X Division back in the game. I think all this, it's like watching Eric Young buy prophylactics. I mean, that was pretty exciting to me, and I thought, man, if this pay-per-view cost $1 million, I'd have to buy it because Eric bought a condom.
Yeah.
I mean, why are they wasting their time on that stuff? I'm asking another, you, like, you're part of the booking committee, but, you know, what's your opinion?
I think Vince Russo must hate wrestling. Because Vinny noted this on the show, that everything he does is some way to try and disguise wrestling. Like, all of a sudden this match has to have strippers and tables in the ring, and this match has to have candles and a coffin, and this match has to be above the ring, and this match isn't even in the ring. It's like all some sort of avoidance to get away from actually... And here's the thing to me on the show that really struck me. There was a huge reaction in the Jerry Lynn match. Why? There was a fight. There was a fight in the crowd, and it got, like, the biggest pop all night. And I thought, okay, why? And the easy answer is, well, there was a real fight.
Right.
But the more complex answer is, it was a real fight, so people cared. There was something in the building that people cared about. And I thought, okay, what got the second biggest pop on the show? That was when Joe hit the Muscle Buster and almost pinned Christian in a wrestling match. He did a wrestling move in a wrestling match. But the people believe in Joe. And I thought, why does this stuff get a big pop? And stuff like the coffin and every other gimmick, wacky gimmick they had on the match, why were people chanting, fire Russo, and this is dumb?
Right.
Because they just want something to believe in. It doesn't even have to be real. It just has to be something they can believe in. And the only things they had all night to believe in were Samoa Joe and a real fight in the crowd.
Yeah.
And to
well,
me,
you know,
you got a problem.
You're right. You're absolutely right. But, you know, that's something that I harp about all the time with Doc. And before you came at the top of the show, we were talking about the pay-per-view a little bit. And I said, it's an Italian street fight 1 week, and it's a Mexican street fight the next week, and then it's a Brooklyn street. But it's like at some point it's that nobody gives a damn street fight because nobody cares anymore. I mean, they've gimmicked you to death with everything, and it makes no sense. And you say, and the people care about Joe. My curiosity, and I like Joe. To me, he's one of the best young talents in the business. But I'm wondering how long the people will care, because at some point they've got to burn him out too, I'm afraid.
Well, he's turning into a guy that, I don't want to necessarily compare him to Ric Flair, because I'm sure he'd be appalled to hear that, but Ric Flair was a guy where you could bury him in his hometown and in the desert and beat him up every time and make him look like a fool, and the people still loved him. Kind of like Matt Hardy, sort of like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that Joe, for a while, Joe was really special. And then they moved him to the heavyweight division, and he was doing a WWE match with former WWE guys, and there was like 8 top guys, and they were all supposedly undefeated, even though they lost a bunch of matches and titles. And he just became a guy. But he still got something where no matter, I mean, losing to Tyson Tomko, getting beaten up by Abyss and Scott Steiner and whoever else, the people still love him. He's still something, and I don't know how. Maybe he's just got that something.
Yeah, yeah.
But he has so far survived a lot of really bad stuff. And I don't know how long it can last. Maybe it'll last a while. Maybe they'll figure it out before he's ruined. I don't know, but
you were talking about Abyss and Sting, and I again, I'm not going to beat this over there, because we've talked about it on the show several times, but that whole Abyss shot his father 3 times and he survived a life-threatening coma. I thought, you know, it would be hard enough trying to sell something that hokey in 1967. Never mind 2000. I mean, to me, it's like I look at, you know, as old as I am, I'm still have enough brain cells left to know that virtually everybody that watches with any regularity understands the business. So, like you just said, a real fight is going to, or trying to simulate a real fight, is going to be a lot more easy to sell than something as so stupid as you shot your father.
The thing with Abyss is he's a big guy with a mask, and he's a monster. And they're determined to try and make him normal. And I'm sure you've heard it a million times. Who wants to see someone normal in wrestling? You don't want to see your neighbor. Who wants to know that the Monster Abyss had a dad? The new thing on the next, I don't know if it's the next TV, I know they did the tapings, but his mom. He's got a mom now. He's got a normal mom. And it's like, who wants to see this monster with a normal mom? Why do we have to know this guy's normal? Why do we have to know his name is Chris? Where's the magic?
Speaking of normal moms, this is not about a mom, but my question also is, since Angle broke Joe's girlfriend or supposed girlfriend's ankle, they've become closer. Do you think there's something in the closet?
Well, maybe she wasn't a good woman.
Maybe that was it. Well, women in wrestling aren't good women, are they, for the most
part? But, I mean, hey, if she's not a good woman, they could have at least explained that to us.
Yeah, you're right.
Instead, she just vanished, and now they're friends.
What did you think of the black and blue carpet?
I actually didn't even see it.
Did you not see it?
No.
It was like the coffin arrived. I'm excited about it.
So they interviewed the coffin.
Yeah, well, yeah.
That would have been at least creative.
But, you know, a lot of that kind of stuff to me back during the Monday Night Wars drove me crazy. And I know that the announcers, whichever show they were on, were told, you know, somebody was in their ear telling them to say this, but it was like, you know, Goldberg's arrived. Goldberg is in the building. Yeah, he's under contract, you damn fool. Of course he's in the building. He wrestles here.
This should be a surprise.
Yeah, it's like, you know, hey, Brian Alvarez is in his house. No, really? What's he doing there?
Yeah, and they announced like there's going to be an electrified cage match, and this show was a good example where they're just looking for some sort of spin on everything, and they just get farther and farther away with every show from what wrestling fans want to see.
Yeah.
It's clear they're not getting new fans to buy the shows, and they're turning off the current fans. I mean, when you've got 1.5 million viewers and 2% of them care enough to buy your pay-per-views, you're doing something wrong. I don't care if you've got 100 million viewers. Only 2% are spending money on you.
Yep, you're right. You're 100% right. And the sad thing is, I know you and I agree on this, that you want to see this company make it because it gives more work to more guys. It helps the industry across the board, and yet, it's like you say, it seems like Vince Russo hates wrestling. That's out to prove it every week.
I wish there was a strong number two company. I don't even know. I mean, I hear from people in TNA that, you know, they're making money, but they're miserable. So, I don't know. I mean, I don't want them to lose their job, but, I mean, when you're not even happy with your job, I don't know what to say.
No, I agree with you 100%. But again, it's you know, it's something I think. I mean, I have had over the years, I've had high level celebrities on shows and so forth. But you know what I think would really be sharp if a high level celebrity just was introduced and did a straight up you know, promo and said, you know, I've been a wrestling fan since I was a kid. I really watch this show on a weekly basis. I enjoy it. It's a lot of fun, and it's just a pleasure to be here. And he doesn't get hit. He doesn't hit anybody. That's the other thing over there. It's almost like celebrity death match.
That's true.
I guess I'll just make this comparison that, I mean, the closest we've got is Donald Trump, but he shoved Vince on Raw Monday night. But I mean, when you look at, if you compare WWE and TNA, one group is trying to do something new on every show and trying to focus on everybody. The other group is focusing on about six people across three different brands.
Right.
And with the most simple storylines possible. Two guys that don't like each other, and you're waiting to see when they're going to attack each other and who's going to do it. And the main event of the biggest show of the year is two guys are going to fight, and the losing representative gets shaved bald. It's all so simple, and they're on fire.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't understand why TNA can't see that. Everything's got to be some complicated stipulation or some convoluted storyline which you can't figure out. And WWE is just going back to the very, very basics, and it's working. And I think there's a lesson to be learned from that. And that's actually what we were talking about with the UFC was UFC 2006 had the biggest year ever because all they did was take two guys, show they didn't like each other, had them fight, and made you pay. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
And WWE now seems to be moving that direction, and business is picking up. And TNA moves farther and farther away from that, and business keeps sliding. And I think that it's pretty obvious what needs to be done here, but now we have an electrified cage match.
You know what? I was just thinking the other day and I to myself that slowly but surely WWE is becoming an alternative to itself. Because I'm not saying they're turning the clock back 30 years, but they're going back to more sound basics, logical angles, and like you say, it's paying off. The house shows have picked up, and this has been the best year they've had, what, in the last four or five?
Yeah, and I look at the show Monday, and the show Monday wasn't great, but that was because I've been spoiled by some awesome shows.
Yeah.
And what used to be a bad show for WWE was a show where the next day you'd have, you know, you get emails from people going, I quit. I give up on wrestling. I hate this.
Right.
And now a bad show is like, well, we didn't have a 3.5-star Shawn Michaels tag team match tonight. We just had a, you know, a 2-star match.
Right.
And that's quite an improvement.
Well, we've got you here, and we're rolling. You haven't been on, or at least not, I haven't been on, I guess, since with you in a while. But tonight, of course, is the big marathon Wrestling Society X thing on MTV. What's your overall take on that and this whole crazy thing that MTV's done with it?
Well, it appears to be done. I think they're burning off most of the episodes tonight, and I don't even know if they will even burn off the rest of the episodes. I'm not sure what their plan is, but I don't think it's a good plan, and I guess we'll find out in a couple of days, but I guess from this point they just shop around and try and find another network that might be interested. But it's I don't know. They had an idea. I like the fact that the shows were different than anything else on TV.
Yeah.
I mean, there was no other wrestling shows like these shows, and they were crazy and they were wacky, but they were different. And I thought that was a good thing. And I liked the fact that they were only a half hour. I thought that as crazy as they were, it was not as mind-numbing as TNA is some weeks. And the problem was it's almost like an excuse that TNA and other companies actually have used, but in this case it was really true. They didn't really have the backing of the network behind them. And it's hard when you're a show that relies 100% on the network. They're not doing house shows. They're not doing pay-per-views. The only money they make is if they get renewed, and the only way to get renewed is to have a good rating, and they really didn't have anybody pushing them to help them get that good rating. So it was almost doomed to failure very early on, and I don't know. It'll be sort of sad to see it go, because I think they had something there. I think there were still a lot of things that could have been improved upon.
Yeah, I agree with you.
But they had something, and it'll be sad.
Let me ask you about pointedly about one thing, and I've said this all along, and I know I've got heat with some of the younger generation, but I think some of the stuff, in fact, Doc and I mentioned this briefly earlier tonight, some of the hokey stuff, the exploding coffins and electrocuting guys, it's so camp, hokey, whatever. I think that would have created short-term interest in a lot of people. I don't think I think they needed to tone some of that down and just let the athleticism of some of these guys speak for itself.
It was kind of like, I haven't been told this, but just from watching it, it seems to me like the idea was this is a live-action cartoon. It's like a Bugs Bunny cartoon.
Yeah.
We're going to have guys literally explode. They're going to fall off high things. We have a ladder here that has CGI sparkles on it that they claim costs $1 million. And it was just, it was like a live-action cartoon. And I'm not... I mean, Bugs Bunny, obviously, the cartoon character, got over,
right.
And Wile E. Coyote, so something worked as far as the cartoons go. I don't know how you translate that into live-action personalities and that sort of thing.
I don't either.
But it was, I don't know, just to me, the strength was it was different, and that's what they need.
Good new talent, too, though, fresh talent.
Yeah, we saw some guys we never saw, and there was too much editing,
yeah.
And I think they tried to fit too much into each show. Not nearly as much as TNA. They tried to fit 2 hours into a one-hour show. This was maybe 45 minutes and a half-hour show, but everything could be slowed down a little bit and less. And it's hard because it's an MTV product, and that's what they want, but just less editing and less, you know.
Right.
I'm gonna miss it though, and I'm gonna watch the marathon tonight.
Well,
I
hope that and I've said this before, Doc. I mean, if there were five big companies, I'd be all for that because it's gonna make jobs for more guys. It's gonna give people more alternatives, and overall, it's gonna make every one of those companies get sharper, or if they're gonna survive.
Right.
Don't you think, Brian?
Oh yeah, I mean it's. You're always better off when you have many opportunities for the talent. If something goes wrong or if you're not happy, well, there's somewhere else you can go. And it's tough. It's not just tough for the talent, but it's tough. I mean, that's why, to me, everyone complains about the brand extension, but I think it's necessary because, in theory, it's a great idea. Guys get stale on Raw, great. They jump to SmackDown. They got a whole new start in life. Unfortunately, it doesn't usually work out that way, but in theory, it's there. And... you know, if you just got one giant brand, you know, after a few years, you've seen everybody in every possible match three times a week, and you don't really have a lot of new stars coming up. Sort of, you're on your way to burnout.
Yeah, yeah,
absolutely.
I
Brian, I want to thank you for being on tonight. I know you've got news to get out for your newsletter, the Figure Four Weekly newsletter. You guys can check out Brian at 4FW.
Figure Four Online.
FigureFourOnline.com.
That's right.
And
that's just for you.
That's just for me. That's he gave me my own URL to get there.
I did. I swear to God, I bought it just for you.
Figure4Online.com. Of course, also Wrestling Observer Live every Sunday. You can check that out at WrestlingObserver.com.
Brian, before we let you go, I need you to promise me that you will keep Doc in line on Saturday night.
I vow to keep Doc in line on Saturday night.
I will be good.
And I wish you all the luck in bringing that Texarkana title back to Seattle.
To the Empire.
Yes.
Back to the Empire. Yes, good luck to you, man.
That's right. So March 17th, Portage, Indiana. Hope to see a bunch of you guys there, and it'll be a fun time.
You can see more information about that match also at FightSportsMidwest.com. That's the promotion that's holding the match.
Cool.
It's going to be a good card, too, with Samoa Joe on there, Eric Cannon.
Claudio Castagnoli.
Yes, it's going.
Fine, gentlemen.
Josh Abercrombie's going to be there from Wrestling Society X. It's going to be a good show, so check it out at the Camelot Sportsplex this weekend, 7 o'clock. Brian, thank you for being on, and we will see you again in a few weeks if you're okay.
Sam,
this match.
I will be okay, but I'm not sure about Larry Sweeney. So
travel safe and have a good time, my friend.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, buddy. Take care.
All right, guys, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we've got a little bit more news to get to. Robbio Rosselli is going to be on the program tonight, so stick around for that. You're listening to Doc Young and Les Thatcher on Wrestling Weekly. We'll be right back.
Wrestling Weekly will return to all the fun right after this.
What are you doing? You having fun?
I'm having a blast.
So many of these wrestling websites nowadays strongly promote their pay-per-view play-by-plays as if they were something unbelievably special. The problem is that they are not special. In fact, they're all the same. Nothing separates one from the other, and if you've seen one, you've seen them all. However, there is one site that has original play-by-play that's different from all the rest. 4WWrestling.com, a proud supporter of the Voice of Wrestling radio show, invites you to witness the ultimate play-by-play experience, live during every WWE pay-per-view. And if you're asking what makes them so different, well, 4W-Wrestling.com is the only site to put up pictures from the actual pay-per-view as it happens. You see what's taken place on the pay-per-view instead of just reading about it. If you're not buying a pay-per-view, but you're looking for the next best thing, 4W-Wrestling.com. Online wrestling evolved.
Hey, do you find that wrestling is more to you than just a passing fancy? Do you need to know more about your favorite wrestler? Do you absolutely have to know all about their history? You, my friend, aren't just passionate. You're obsessed.
Geez, you know, that information might have been a little more useful to me yesterday.
We have a fix for that.
Throw me a frickin' bone here. Need the info.
Check out obsessedwithwrestling.com. All the info you need to know about everyone. Located at www.obsessedwithwrestling.com. Histories, title info, bios, aliases, real names.
Once again, things that could have been brought to my attention yesterday!
If wrestling isn't just a passion, but an obsession, check out www.obsessedwithwrestling.com today.
Wrestling-radio.com, the internet's newest wrestling radio promotion. We offer a direct link to your wrestling radio website, a personal profile, and a control panel to maintain your own shows. And it's all free. That's right, 100% free. Wrestling-radio.com promotes some of the best online wrestling radio shows today, such as The Main Event with Chris, Woody and Will, The Irish Whip with Big Joe and JP, The Yard with Moondog, Wrestling Weekly with Doc Young and the legendary Les Thatcher, plus many more. So what are you waiting for? Sign up today and watch your show grow. For more information, log on to www.wrestling-radio.com today.
He considers himself God's gift to wrestling, and millions of his faithful agree. With nearly 4 hours of footage and exclusive commentary and matches, this DVD chronicles Daniel's rise from Chicago's Windy City Wrestling to the Asylum in Nashville, and finally to the top of TNA. TNA Home Video presents Heaven Sent, Hell Bound, The Best of Christopher Daniels. Available at most retailers and TNAWrestling.com.
Doc Young and Les Thatcher back here with you at Wrestling Weekly. Les, we got a few more news items to get to.
Well, just go with it, Doc. I'm here to add my 50 cents, 2 cents, or $1.98, whatever it takes.
A dollar's good.
Okay.
There's rumors making the rounds, of course, and it was reported in the Calgary Sun that Teddy Hart might be signing a deal with WWE once his MTV contract expires.
You know what? Anything that comes up with Teddy Hart, I take with a grain of salt till I see it happen.
Yeah.
Teddy is one of the great self-promoters of all time. But not unlike our friend Hulk Hogan, who knows the right time to say things and what to say to make contracts work well. But Teddy is just Teddy's loose cannon sometimes.
and this sounds like speculation too, because the rumors are going that he could possibly team with Harry Smith and Natty Neidhart, a new Hart Foundation, which if you put new in front of any stable, tag team, whatever you want to call it, it's usually a recipe for disaster, of course. Let me say this.
I've been able to see Harry Smith on OVW,
yes.
Right, which airs here in Cincinnati on the CW channel on Saturday afternoons. When I say I'm not impressed, I don't mean that in a disrespectful way either. It's just I had heard so much, mm-hmm. right, that I expected more. He's not bad, but he's far from ready.
You think?
I know.
Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't. Of course, I'm not pulling the trigger up at Stanford, but I mean, no, he's not ready to be up there. Natty, she's a terrific looking girl. I've never had the opportunity to see her work. She's a strike. I mean, I don't know. Say she's handsome, but she's a striking looking girl. But I don't know that particular threesome. The major ingredient that's missing there is experience.
Mm-hmm.
And
there's nobody to learn off of. There's nobody really to learn off of.
Well, no, or to lead.
Right.
And I don't know that I've never heard Harry or Natty talk, but I don't see Teddy carrying, in terms of promo and stuff. It's just no. It's not a bad concept. It's not a bad idea. But I would think that they would need a Canadian manager, maybe, or somebody to do the talking. But still, you put him in the ring, they're going to have to work with experienced guys to make it work. And the whole other little deal is with her,
what do you do?
Yeah, exactly. You don't have six-person. Well, you could have six-person tags.
You could, but who? How many other tag teams are there that are managed by a woman?
Yeah, well, there's...
There's only so many.
Yeah, right. And so anyway, it's I don't see it happening anytime soon anyway. And like I say, of course that it wouldn't be the first time they brought an inexperienced guy up and pushed him to the heavens, because it happens all the time. The Russian guy that Jerry Jarrett had taken them, I'm under the impression now that they've just decided to pull the plug on him.
Really?
And
the guy that loves WWE?
Yeah. 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 Well, I say pull the plug. He's just not ready.
Yeah,
and there's Rodimer, whatever his name is. He's down in OVW now. He used to be in Deep South. I had heard that they were really excited about bringing him up, and I watch him every Saturday and think, why? I mean, the guy's got size. He's got a look. He's not a strong promo, and he's not even ready in the ring. He's just not.
And this, the talking about it like this just brings me back to the one-year rule that they have, I guess they've implemented as far as the developmental territories go with Deep South.
Well, let me say this. I don't know who implemented it. It could have been my father, God rest his soul, and I would still say it's the dumbest rule I've ever heard.
And
you can't set a time limit on somebody's learning.
Right.
I can say, Doc, you either learn this in the next 15 minutes or 15 days or whatever, or else I'm going to stop trying to teach you.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean you don't have the talent. It just means you don't. I've had guys come into my camp that looked, my God, these guys are going to be great, and then 3 months later they just plateau, and it's not there. And I've had guys that started. Well, Chet the Jet, who's in OVW, he and a kid that he graduated from high school with in Buffalo came to me at the same time when they were 18 years old. And Pepper Parks, the other kid, was part of the A squad. But anyway, Pepper, we actually had to put tape markings in the middle of the ropes to be sure he ran a straight line when he was running the ropes. Now, does that sound stupid, silly, whatever? But because he would, he would start angling off and end up in the wrong place.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you would have thought back when we were doing this with him, is this kid ever? He turned into a good little worker. And the truth is, he dropped out to help his dad. His dad owns a small business in Buffalo, And I'll give you a little history. The A Squad began as Chet the Jet Jablonski. Pepper Parks was a male cheerleader way before there was ever a Spirit Squad, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
And Brock Guffman, who is one of the best independent managers going, he was their manager, right? Okay. Then, now, of course, Chet has a contract. Added to them, we came up with Dean Visk, who became Dean Jablonski because he and Chet looked a little bit alike. So that was the A Squad. Dean also had a contract with OEW, but was dropped. So who do we add into the mix? We added a guy by the name of Derek Nykerk, who was in Deep South, and was one of Heyman's bodyguards,
right,
with the mask on, along with Doug Basham. Then we added to the A Squad a guy by the name of B.J. Whitmer.
Awesome.
Yeah, so the only guy in the A Squad, other than the manager, that has not gone on to prominence would be Pepper, and believe me, he was being looked at. He was in a Super 8 in 2002, I think it was.
Yeah, and I still see his name come up every once
in
a while.
Yeah, but he was back down here for a while, and they were using him. He was working pretty steady, and in fact, I think Terry Taylor was looking at him with a little interest. And anyway, he moved back to Buffalo again to help his dad, which is commendable, admirable, whatever, but, you know, it obviously puts a little crimp in his you know, wrestling career,
right,
if he's going to have one. But he and Matt Stryker had some tremendous cruiserweight matches here back a number of years ago. But yeah, but that whole group. But Pepper, the point I'm trying to make was he wasn't easy to teach initially,
mm-hmm,
but turned into a real good performer. So you can't set a time limit. You can't look at a guy and say, okay, you've got to be ready in 15 days. Or 15 minutes or whatever, you just cannot do that.
Right. And I think they'll learn when they miss out on a couple of guys who go train somewhere else, if they drop them early and they become big stars later on. I think they'll learn from this in time.
Well, you know, I have been told that I keep guys in too long before I put them out and give them their first match. And, you know, Juan, I would rather err in that direction than in the other direction, because
mm-hmm,
I'm around here currently. I'm seeing guys who don't have any business being out there and as we were talking earlier with Brian, some of these guys aren't good to start with. They've been pushed out of the nest too quickly, and they refuse to acknowledge the fact that they still have to learn, right?
Right.
So they won't. And so then the next thought process will be, gosh, I don't know why I don't have a contract.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, I do. it's a very simple, you know, very simple equation. But, yeah, it's you can't set a time limit on guys to put them out. And as far as the developmental thing, this international thing, if they do that, that could be a blessing for young guys learning. But I've said this before, Deep South and OVW, and add two or three more. You know,
definitely.
Because it's a numbers game.
Mm-hmm.
It is definitely a numbers game.
Absolutely. One programming note for TNA fans, the April 5th edition of TNA Impact is going to be preempted for several hours due to a UFC Ultimate Fight Night Live special. Impact is going to air at 11 p.m. Eastern on April 5th, so keep that in mind. We're going to take a quick break, guys. When we come back, of course, our main guest, Romeo Rosselli, is going to be here. You might have seen him on some pay-per-view show on Sunday. I don't remember. Something like that. But he's going to be here with us.
Okay, whatever.
Of course, he appeared on TNA's pay-per-view on Sunday, and he's going to be here with us in just a few moments, so stick around.
We know, you hate this part, but Wrestling Weekly will return after this short break.
Why are you doing this to me?
There's the latest news and information on total non-stop action wrestling. It's TNAWrestling.com. TNAWrestling.com. Log on right now and get your fix of all things TNA Wrestling. Event photos, streaming video, and all of the backstage gossip. It's just one click away. Plus, right now, you can find special savings in our merchandise area with a complete line of DVDs featuring Nevermore, The Best of Raven, and Enigma, the best of Jeff Hardy, and Phenomenal, the best of AJ Styles. Plus, all of our monthly pay-per-view events on DVD as well. And don't forget to check out photos of our lovely ladies in the knockout section. It's your online home for total non-stop action wrestling. It's TNAWrestling.com. TNAWrestling.com.
Wrestling-radio.com, the internet's newest wrestling radio promotion. We offer a direct link to your wrestling radio website, a personal profile, and a control panel to maintain your own shows. And it's all free. That's right, 100% free. Wrestling-radio.com promotes some of the best online wrestling radio shows today, such as The Main Event with Chris, Woody and Will, The Irish Whip with Big Joe and JP, The Yard with Moondog, Wrestling Weekly with Doc Young and the legendary Les Thatcher, plus many more. So what are you waiting for? Sign up today and watch your show grow. For more information, log on to www.wrestling-radio.com today.
He considers himself God's gift to wrestling, and millions of his faithful agree. With nearly 4 hours of footage and exclusive commentary and matches, this DVD chronicles Daniel's rise from Chicago's Windy City Wrestling to the Asylum in Nashville, and finally to the top of TNA. TNA Home Video presents Heaven Sent, Hell Bound, the best of Christopher Daniels. Available at most retailers and TNAWrestling.com.
Hey, do you find that wrestling is more to you than just a passing fancy? Do you need to know more about your favorite wrestler? Do you absolutely have to know all about their history? You, my friend, aren't just passionate. You're obsessed.
Geez, you know, that information might have been a little more useful to me yesterday.
We have a fix for that.
Throw me a frickin' bone here. Need the info.
Check out obsessedwithwrestling.com. All the info you need to know about everyone. Located at www.obsessedwithwrestling.com. Histories, title info, bios, aliases, real names.
Once again, things that could have been brought to my attention yesterday!
If wrestling isn't just a passion, then an obsession. Check out www.obsessedwithwrestling.com today.
Doc Young and Les Thatcher back here with you at Wrestling Weekly. Right now on the line, you saw him, of course, on TNA's pay-per-view Destination X on Sunday. And he's former WWE superstar and the guy that hurt my shoulder, Romeo Rosselli's here.
And the guy that hurt your shoulder, you should say that first. That's the,
Romeo, I'm playing Judge Les tonight, and Doc is suing you for $8 trillion.
I'll tell you, I've never heard of a bigger baby in my life. When was that? When was that show? Like 6 months ago, and he's still complaining about it.
It was in October.
October, jeez.
But I didn't find out about this injury. I mean, I had the pains and stuff, but I didn't know what it was until last week.
Jeez.
Well,
it's horrible.
Can you imagine the guy took one bump in his entire frigging life, and all he's been whining to me about this for weeks now.
I have not been. Hey,
someone needs to call the ambulance on this guy, man. Jeez.
So, Romeo, you just came back from Italy. You did a tour out there. What was that like?
Right. Yeah. Well, I just did. I did two tours. One was in December, and one was just in February, and it's. You know, it's a dream come true over there. You know, I have Italian heritage, and my dad was born in Italy, and on my mother's side, all my mother's, my grandmother, and all that was born in Italy too. So my mother's really the only one that was born here, but then everyone behind her was born in Italy. So I mean, I have very strong Italian heritage, and you know, I'm very proud, you know, to go over there.
Whereabouts in Italy are you from?
My dad is from Bari,
mm-hmm.
and my mother's side is from Potenza.
Excellent.
And I'm fortunate enough to still have some family over there, and
we actually did some shows close enough for them to come see me wrestle, which was another, you know, amazing moment. And, you know, on top of that, you know, they've never even seen me wrestle before. So that was, you know, that was great as well.
That's exciting. You know, let me ask you, because of your heritage, well, obviously with your family nearby, I'm assuming you were probably a babyface, but because of the Italian background, were you pretty much a babyface? Just that was the way it was?
Yeah, I mean, I was a babyface, and, you know, I don't think I would have wanted to be a heel in Italy, you know, anyway.
Right.
You know, because I was just so happy and excited to be wrestling, you know, in Italy. So, I mean, yeah, and, you know, when you're announced as your last name is Roselli, and, you know, my legal name is Giovanni. So, you know, when you're announced as, you know, Romeo Giovanni Roselli, you know, that's I think that's something that fans can kind of get with.
Right. How could you not cheer that name in Italy?
And I guess maybe, I don't know, maybe possibly it has something to do with me wearing the Italian colors as well. You know, maybe that helps.
Yeah.
Do the guys with the black fedoras show up in any of these shows?
What's that?
The guys with the black fedoras, you know, any of the mafioso.
Oh, I can reveal that information.
All right.
That is such a racial stereotype, Les.
I know. But, well, you know, we're talking about the wrestling business, Doc.
That's true. That's actually true.
What is your point here?
And that brings up a good question. Have you ever been asked to do some sort of gimmick like that where you're sort of a mafia type of guy just because, you know, you have Italian heritage?
Well, I actually did. I did something called the Moxie Family in around 2001 for Nova's brother. He ran a promotion in New Jersey called Phoenix Championship Wrestling, and I was part of a group called the Moxie Family, and we kind of did a spoof off the Sopranos. But besides that, I mean, yeah, I kind of get every once in a while there's a gimmick will pop up that they want me to do some type of Italian thing. But that was the only other time I did an Italian type gimmick was that was for that promotion in New Jersey for Nova's brother.
You know what I remember most about Nova's brother? I saw him work for IWA Mid South, and he did the pool cue thing from the heel on the Terry Funk, damn it, the Terry Funk and Patrick Swayze movie Roadhouse.
Oh, did he? I didn't see that.
You didn't see the movie, or you didn't see
it? I didn't see him do it.
Oh yeah, well he was. I on his own show maybe didn't even bother. But he managed down here, and he was, you know, like, you know, you remember the guy in the movie?
Right.
I do.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, he did that gimmick, and you just reminded me of it. That's all.
He was, you know, he's a very good guy, and you know, he had a nice little promotion going down there for a while. And
yeah.
I know that he stopped to become a cop, and now he's a full-time police officer in New Jersey right now.
Wow, that's cool. Everybody's got what they want to do, you know. They got their dreams.
You're keeping real busy on the indie scene, aren't you? I mean, you're kicking all over the place.
I'm trying to.
And how was it doing the TNA pay-per-view versus having spent some time on Uncle Vince's TV? Was, you know... is it more pressure, less pressure? What's the deal?
I mean, pay-per-view is pay-per-view. I don't care if it's for TNA. I don't care if it's WWE. You know, it doesn't matter who it's for. You know, and that's a big stage to be on. So, you know, there was pressure, but it was exciting, especially to be, you know, to return back on television. You know?
Right.
And, you know, to make things even better was that, you know, the New Age Outlaws were at their peak, you know, when I was just a fan.
Right.
You know, and I wasn't even in the wrestling business yet when I saw those guys on TV. And, you know, I was sitting in the crowd and you know, in 1999 watching them. And, you know, if you nudged me and said, hey, you know, in a couple years, you're going to be wrestling those guys on a pay-per-view, I would have been, you know, my mind would have been blown away. You know, and, you know, it happened, you know.
That is cool, is it not? I mean, I remember when I was a young man, getting the opportunity to work with guys I had bought tickets to see in the past, and it's exciting.
Yeah, and it really was. You know, it was a good experience. You know, and it's just another thing. You know, I could say that, you know, in the era that I wrestled, I've now wrestled for the two biggest companies in the era, and I've been both their pay-per-views, so I'm very proud of that.
That's true. Nobody could take that away.
I know last time you were on, we were talking about you doing some modeling. Are you doing much modeling currently?
I'm doing a little bit. That's actually been you know, on the back burner right now just because wrestling's been so busy. And then, you know, with the international tours, you know, it's kind of hard to book modeling jobs, and I've actually had to turn away a few, which was unfortunate, but, you know, that's just the way it goes because, you know, wrestling will always take precedence.
Sure. Now, this last paper, the TNA pay-per-view, was that the first time you and your partner have been back together in a while, or have you guys been working some shots together?
It's been about 50-50. We, on the independents, we do singles, and then we're still getting booked as a team every once in a while, but not all the time. But it wasn't like, and unfortunately for us, it wasn't like, oh, hey, we're teaming after a year and a half and not really seeing or talking to each other.
Right.
You know, because you know, that would have been, you know, a big strike, you know, against us. But, you know, we still talk all the time, every day, communicate, and we're still tagging fairly consistently on the independents.
How do you feel that your match went by yourself?
I mean, it was fun, you know, and whenever you do a TV match, you know, and the pay-per-view match, it always goes by so fast, you know, and it came and it went with the snap of the fingers. And it was, you know, it was fun to do. It was fun to wrestle in Orlando, and you know, that's a cool little building and setup they got there. Everybody was standing up, and the crowd was hot whole night. And like I said, we got to wrestle arguably one of the greatest tag teams, you know, of the decade. So, you know, I was very happy with it.
Something that the fans probably wouldn't catch on to, and if it's your first time in the ring with Brian James. Mm-hmm. So many people look at him and they don't understand what he is once the bell rings, but his timing and psychology are such that it must. I've worked with his dad, I've worked with his brothers, but it must be like a night off with Brian, is it not?
It was great to work with those two, and you know, we went in not knowing what to expect. You know, were they going to be these, you know, huge superstars that were just going to say, okay, boys, here's how it's going to be? But they were, you know, they were really good to work with. You know, they accepted our ideas. They wanted to work with us, and you know, it was really fun and you know, really encouraging as well. And you know, those guys are great to work with, and I can only hope that, you know, we could do it again with them, because I would love to do it again.
Do you get nervous before a big match like that, for a pay-per-view match, or is it sort of more exciting?
I think now it's a point where it's more exciting. Now it's a point where it's almost to a point where, you know what, I got something to prove now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've been to the show. I've been here already. You know, I've been on TV already. I've been on pay-per-view already. So, you know, it's almost to the point of, you know, the nerves are going to be there, which is good because, you know, you need those butterflies. But
yeah,
you know,
I was just going to say the same thing. I could tell through all the 20 years that I worked that if I wasn't wired at least a little bit, then it was probably going to be a flat night for me.
Yeah, and then you could also take that too as well. If you're not wired or anything, that maybe you don't even care, you know, and you don't want that, you know. You don't want to go into a match, well, you know, whatever. Well, let's just get this over with, you know.
Yeah.
You never want to say that.
No. Well, you know, and Doc, in that respect, one of my all-time favorite basketball players, Bill Russell, used to throw up.
Right. Mm-hmm.
In fact, there's a story about Red Auerbach, you know, the Hall of Fame coach of the Celtics through all those championship years, that one night Russ didn't, and Red made him go back to the locker room and put his finger down his throat because he felt that was important to get him ready for the game, you know.
There's a there's an actress, Taya Leone. She does the same thing before every scene, almost.
Sometimes you got to stick with what works, too, and if you're superstitious, sometimes
you've
got to
do it. I didn't puke tonight. I'm going to get injured. I better run to the bathroom.
Yeah.
I want you to tell us a story about you went on this show a few months ago called Pants Off, Dance Off.
Oh, boy.
On Fuse TV. Tell us how you got on that show and how does that work?
Well, I was on the phone with one of the agencies that I work for, one of the talent and modeling agencies, and they told me about this show on television where you would, you know, have to strip, you know, not all the way, and you dance, and there's a competition, and, you know, I'd get paid very well, and I'd get paid even more if I won.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I was like, hey, it's on television. I get to strip. I don't have a bad body. I, you know, and, you know, why not show it off? And the pay they offered me was great. So I said, yeah, why not? And I, you know, I really didn't realize, how many people would have watched the show.
did you get a lot of proposals?
I won't even get to what I got. I've never realized how many people watch this show or how many people even happen to catch it in passing, you know, and it was definitely a little more than I bargained for, but, you know, I did it, and it's going to keep replaying because people still tell me they just saw it, like, you know, last week or whatever, but to toot my own horn, I did make the Hottest Hotties edition.
Let me ask a question. What network is it on? I would like to watch it.
This is on Fuse TV.
It's on Fuse TV, and it's not a channel that everybody gets,
right.
Which was also, too, I was like, oh, you know, probably not a lot of people, you know, would even get the channel. But then I realized that I was never safe of who would watch it when all of a sudden... my mom called me.
Oh, jeez.
So that was kind of
my baby. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Now, do they set you in front of a green screen and do they play music while they're filming this part?
Yeah, exactly.
Because I noticed some things in the background, like it. The show basically is that I guess you get to pick the song that you're going to dance to.
Right.
And it's basically just this, like, striptease dance where you go down to basically your underwear and you know, no shirtless, and that's about it.
Right.
And then everybody...
And that's nothing that I'm not used to anyway.
Right. And
you
then,
know?
And then everybody votes for their favorite one. I think you came in second that week.
Well, no. Well, I'll say this. I won the online voting.
Oh, you did?
I did not win the text message voting. See, the text message voting is very biased. The online voting is very accurate, and I'll tell you why, because you can only vote once for online voting, and then it will not allow you to vote again. The text message voting, you can vote as much as you want, and I really didn't publicize it, you know, too much, you know, that I was going to be on this show, and I'm sure if I did, then, you know, I probably would have got more votes, but...
Where was it taped at, Romeo?
It was taped in New York City.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Now, is this something that you look back on and say, yeah, it was fun, I did it, or are you starting to have remorse that you were on the show?
I'm not having remorse, you know. It's just something that I could put on tape again and put on the shelf and just laugh at myself about.
But, you know, it's something you put in a resume tape too, for God's sake. I mean, in
yeah.
day and age with the business, you know, character. No, it's true, Doc. Don't laugh.
It is. That wasn't me laughing.
Characters are important. They really are.
Yeah, and it's a credit.
Look what Dancing with the Stars did for Emmett Smith, for God's sake.
Right. It's a TV credit too.
That's true.
Sure.
We got some questions from our live chat room. Joey Numbers, he says, what do you feel is more challenging for you, singles or tag competition?
Challenging. You know, they're both fun for me. And, you know, there was a point, I would say, about 6 months ago where I was just doing all, you know, all singles. And I was getting used to and comfortable with that. And then, you know, I would say, you know, just recently again, we've been doing a lot more tag stuff. And you know, it's really fun doing both, and you know, I would say challenging. You know, I would say it's kind of harder to put a tag team match together just because you have you know, three other guys to try to bond with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as opposed to just having one opponent, you know, and bouncing off of him. You know, so, you know, with four guys, you have to be on the same page. And, you know, if something, you know, goes a little astray, then, you know, hopefully the four guys can, you know, pick it up. So it probably is a little more challenging just because the amount of people involved in the match.
When you teamed up back with Antonio, I know you said that you guys speak a lot and you're still in touch all the time, but you didn't work together all that much when you were in the indies. Right. Was it did you feel rusty, or did you just feel like, hey, I just tagged with this guy yesterday?
You mean when we started tagging again?
Yeah.
It really wasn't rusty. We kind of just let out a sigh of relief, and let's just said, you know what, let's go out, let's have fun, and let's do everything that we always talked about, you know, and, you know, not worry about anything. So, and, you know, every match we were like, oh wow, you know, this was fun, you know. So I don't think there was any real rust involved.
Trying to find a good question in here that's not about the Chippendales act, but I mean let's talk about that for a minute. Do you like that gimmick? I mean, is it something that you thought was a good idea at the time? Obviously, you know, they tell you, you know, here's what you're going to do, blah, blah, blah. Was there high hopes for it as far as it getting over the sort of Chippendales sort of act?
In WWE, you're talking
yes,
about?
Yes.
I mean, of course there's always should be high hopes for anybody, you know. So, of course, there were high hopes. And, you know, it was a gimmick that was started by Jim Cornette that got super hot in OVW.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you ask anybody who worked in OVW at the time or who wrestled in OVW at the time, they will tell you that it was one of the hottest things OVW has ever had. And considering the talent roster that has gone through there, that's saying something.
It definitely was, and a lot of people don't know that because a lot of people don't get to see OVW. But this was a big, big gimmick.
Yeah.
When it was going there, and Andy asked, "Do you miss your manager from OVW?"
Yeah, and actually, we still keep in touch with him every once in a while, and we actually just talked to him a few days ago. And unfortunately, it appears that he's gotten out of the business now. But,
who was your manager down there, Romeo?
It was Morris Green. Mo Green. He was on WWE television for a little while as Ernest the Cat Miller's.
Yeah, he's a good little worker too.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, what's he doing currently?
He's starting up his own personal training business.
Oh yeah, good for him. Yeah, he came up and worked some shots for me before I got rid of the company.
Yeah, and he's a real good guy.
Yeah, he is. He's a super guy. And you know, and that's the other thing too. His size was obviously against him, but he was a good little hand in the ring. I enjoyed watching him work.
Yeah, he was good in the ring, and you know, he was good with us. And you know, some people said, you know, we weren't the same without him.
Well, I don't know. It's kind of it kind of is, and it kind of isn't. You know, it was a big three-man storyline, obviously, and the way it was set was that, you know, the three guys worked together and bonded and things like that. But to miss one like that. But then again, like I said, a lot of people, you know, they didn't get to see the OVW stuff that you guys did together. So for the fans that did get to see it, it kind of is like it's missing something. But, you know, for the guys who only first got to see you when you went to WWE, it's like, there they are. It's the heartthrobs.
Sometimes the little ingredients make the big things work better.
And like I said previously too, you know, unfortunately we never really got the time to work on house shows first and to even do dark matches first.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's another thing that really hurt us, because we were only teaming a few months, and then and we were baby faces in OVW, and then we didn't have an opportunity to do any house shows or any dark matches. And then we got called up right to TV as heels, you know, so there was really, really no time to prepare. And, you know, looking back at, you know, a lot of people that get called up, you know, they usually get, you know, house shows and dark matches first.
Yeah. Doc there is an answer to what we were talking about earlier. Romeo, was Doc said to me what I thought of the 1 year rule that supposedly is in developmental now, and I said even if my father had come up with it, it's probably the stupidest thing I've ever heard, because you can't put a time limit on someone learning.
Right. You know, everyone learns at a different pace and a different speed, you know.
Exactly. I'm going to have to ask you the question before we run out of time that Doc is wanting to ask, and he just won't for whatever reason, is you stood like within inches of his woman on Tuesday night, and he would probably, if you were live in studio with us, he would be wanting to touch you because you touched Christy Evie.
Right. Just well, whatever part of... Never mind. Never mind. Go ahead, Romeo.
We won't get into Doc wanting to touch me, but...
definitely. Let's change the subject on that one.
Doc, well, go ahead, Doc. Man. What was it like standing next to Christy?
Romeo, what was it like standing next to Christy Hemme?
She's obviously a very beautiful, attractive woman, and she's very easy on the eyes, and I had no problem staring into her big, beautiful eyes.
Yeah.
The hesitation after the big and beautiful, I like that.
Yeah.
When's your next, when are you going back to Italy again?
I'm actually defending the Italian Championship in England in April for 1PW. And 1PW and NWE, which is the name of the Italian group, they are joining forces for a big April show in England, so I'll be defending the title there. And then the next Italian tour will be in June, and that will cover Italy, Spain, England, and possibly Australia.
Wow. Quickly, before we get out of here, you've spent a lot of time in Italy lately. Is there any big differences between the fans of Italy and the American fans? Are the shows... Is there differences in, I guess, the feeling of the shows?
Well, the fans, it's a lot more kids oriented, and there's a lot more. It's definitely not the 18 to 34 year old demographic. It's definitely for the kids,
mm-hmm.
and it's not something that's been around a while, so it's still new. So I mean, I'm sure once it's around a while, maybe then, you know, maybe it'll get more, you know, older. But as for now, it's really for the kids, and it's really entertainment oriented, and it's actually, you know, it's very, very fun.
With it being so fresh over there, it's probably a lot easier to work the crowd, isn't it?
It is. I mean, I never like to say that. Oh, it's easy, but you know, it is. It does make it a little more comforting when you know the fans, you know, they're going to be into it, and you know they're already excited going in. And, you know, they're just sitting there, you know, waiting to clap, you know.
Right. Romeo, I want to thank you for being on. Guys, check out more about Romeo at RomeoRosselli.com. You still have that up, right?
I still have it up, yes, sir.
And MySpace.com/RomeoRosselli.
That's it.
Romeo, the next time you're through Cincy, I hope that logistics, that we can hook up and chat a while. It's always a pleasure.
Sounds good. Yeah, for sure. I'm usually there about once every month for the big HWA taping and the big Whiskey Dick shows.
Right. Well, I can't make Tuesday nights because Doc won't let me off the hook. But maybe
we'll
I make the next Whiskey Dick show.
Sounds good.
All right, my friend. Good luck to you and travel safe.
Thank you.
Take care,
guys. Okay.
Romeo Rosselli, guys, here on Wrestling Weekly. It's going to wrap things up for this week. We're up against the wall. We got to get out of here. I am going to put some ice on my shoulder. I'm kidding, Les. We'll be back with you guys next week from 8 to 10 Eastern. And, of course, the lovely Lacey from Ring of Honor is going to be here with us next week. And, of course, you can catch her on Wrestling Society Extra at WSExtra.com tonight while the big marathon's going on. They're going to have some stuff, and Lacey hosts it. Beautiful woman, Les.
All right.
Is that Lacey?
Maybe I'll get a chance to check that out then.
All right, guys. I'm going to watch the big marathon tonight. So we'll see you again next week from 8 to 10. Good night, everybody.